So what do we do? Nico asked, standing to one side of Volker. We take her, boys. They're coming to help Syracuse, but they're walking right into our hands. A priest and an old lady on a nice, fat, shiny ship, said one of the crewmen. She'll bring a good price at Ceres, better than this creaking old tub Syracuse. Volker laughed. It was all working out beautifully, he thought. Maybe we can leave Syracuse, let her drift. I can bring Pauline and her daughter here aboard Bogotot. The crew will be happy with the daughter, and I can keep Pauline for myself. If I can keep Kirk and Nico away from her. Yes, sir, he said aloud. We ought to thank that kid for sending out this distress call. He's luring a good ship straight to us. What could be better?
You can have the old lady, skipper, Kirk said, grinning. We'll take the two tarts from Syracuse.
Yeah, one of the crewmen chimed in. I bet the daughter's still a virgin.
Not for long,
they all laughed. Holding up a hand, Volker said, First things first, boys, first things first. I hope none of you has religious qualms about slitting a priest's throat. After posting his men for seizing the approaching hunter, Volker got up from his chair, ducked through the hatch, and started down the passageway that led to his quarters. He didn't have to look behind him to know that Kirk and Nico were trailing him. Come on, fellas, he said amiably, sliding open the door to his compartment. Have a drink on me. They stepped in, Nico carefully shutting the door behind him as Volker went to the cabinet where he kept his liquor. Not much left, he saw. Most of the bottles were perilously close to empty. He pulled out the fullest, brandy from one of the L4 habitats between the Earth and Moon, and opened it with a satisfactory pop of its plastic cork. Good times coming, Volker said, pouring three meager drinks. As he accepted his glass from Volker's hand, Kirk said,
You banged the mother, didn't you?
Volker grinned at him. That I did, Kirk. That I did. How was she? Asked Nico. Not half bad. Kind of tense at first, but I soothed her well enough. Kirk swallowed more than half his drink with one gulp, then asked,
When's our turn?
In due time. We've got to grab Hunter first.
That shouldn't be much of a problem, said Nico. An old woman and a priest.
What's a priest doing out here? Kirk wondered.
Isn't he the one who's supposed to be finding the dead bodies? Nico said.
Yes, that's him, said Volker. Some sort of religious fanatic.
Well, he'll be a dead body himself in a few more hours, Kirk said.
Then he finished his drink with another swift gulp. Speaking of dead bodies, Volker said, without offering to refill the drink, we've got that boy to take care of.
We should have done that already, Nico grumbled.
No, said Kirk. Let the kid finish swabbing the antennas. Let him do the work. Then we'll finish him.
Volker took a genteel sip of his brandy, then mused aloud. Maybe we ought to take care of the kid before Hunter gets here. No sense having him around when we take the ship. Get rid of him now. Kirk glanced at Nico, then shrugged.
Wouldn't take much. We'd go out with him, finish the antenna job, then we yank out his airline and send him jetting into deep space.
Nico giggled.
He might be the first guy to reach Alpha Centauri.
Volker saw that Nico's glass was empty, too. Taking both glasses and putting them down on the cabinet, Volker turned and laid a hand on each of their shoulders. Good thinking, lads. Gently he nudged them toward the door. Now you go out there and take care of the boy. I want him out of our hair by the time Hunter gets here. Victor Zacharias unconsciously scratched at his thick beard as he scowled at his communication screen. The system displayed a graph showing the direction from which Hunter's message had come, but not the ship's distance from him.
That damned half-robot, he growled inwardly, telling me to turn myself into the authorities.
Victor refigured the keyboard beneath his fingers to call up the propulsion controls, then lit Pleiades' fusion torch engine to full thrust, heading along the vector of Hunter's message. They'll be gone by the time I get there, he realized. But maybe I can pick up their ion trail, if it hasn't diffused too much. Maybe I can track them and let them lead me to Pauline and the kids. Maybe.
Warship, Syracuse, Pauline's quarters. She stayed in the shower until the ship's life support computer shut off the hot water. As she toweled dry, Pauline said to herself for the 10,000th time, "You did it to protect Angela and Thee. It's all right. You did what you had to do. You didn't have any choice, really." Still, she felt grimy. As she dressed, she thought that it could have been worse, much worse. Pauline had wondered, as she watched him strip and climb into bed with her, grinning like a wolf, if she could actually allow another man to make love to her. She closed her eyes, picturing Victor in her mind. "I'll fake it," she told herself. "I'll please him as much as I can. It doesn't matter what he does to me. I've got to protect Angela." To her surprise, Volker was a gentle lover, even thoughtful. All his swaggering, smirking attitude dissolved as he genuinely sought to bring pleasure to her. With some surprise, Pauline remembered what she had learned all those years ago before she'd met Victor. You never know what a man is truly like until you're in bed with him. Once dressed, she walked absently into the family room. Everything was still the same. All the chairs in their places, the sofa, the lamps, and wall screens. "But I'm not the same," she told herself. "I've been unfaithful to my husband. I allowed that grinning hyena to use me." Then the truth slapped her in the face. "I enjoyed it. I enjoyed having sex after all these years. My body overpowered my mind." She sank into the nearest chair, guilt flooding through her like a tidal wave, and burst into racking sobs. A noise from the galley startled her. Staunching her tears, she went to the hatch and saw Theo sitting at the table, his back to her, scraping the remains of a meal from his plate. Pauline hurriedly wiped her face, rubbed her eyes. She had to swallow hard before she could get any words out. "Thee?" He turned and smiled at her. "Hi, Mom. Where have you been?" Ignoring his question, "How long have you been here, in the galley?" His youthful face wrinkled slightly with thought. 10, maybe 15 minutes? I thought I heard the shower running." "Yes," she said, sitting beside him, hoping he wouldn't notice her reddened eyes. "I've got to go out again, finish the work on the new antennas." "Have you checked on Angela?" "No, didn't get a chance to do that. Those two apes were with me all the time I was out. I just got rid of them no more than a half hour ago." "I don't think anyone's aboard right now." "Yeah, but they'll be here in a few minutes to finish the antenna work. Maybe you can call Angie on the intercom while I start to suit up." Pauline nodded. "I'll do that." Silently, she added, "If the intercom is working today."
Angela was startled by the intercom's sudden chime. She'd been pacing around the circular interior of the storm cellar, counting her steps. 253, 254. Nothing better to do. Locked in the pod alone. Then the intercom chimed. She touched the keypad, and her mother's face appeared on the tiny wall screen. "Are you all right?" they asked simultaneously. Pauline broke into a tight smile. "I'm fine, Angela. What about you?" "I'm bored out of my skull. There's nothing to do in here." "Good. Just stay there. It's the safest place in the ship for you." "But..." "No buts, Angela. Stay in there. Stay where it's safe." The screen went blank. Angela stared at it for long moments, thinking. If it's safe in here,